Each month, we catch up with RNIB's campaigns team. We'll look at some of the latest projects and, of course, how you can get involved as a campaigns volunteer. Well, Costa is with us once again from our Camden studios, and we've got a couple of pieces we're going to be chatting about today, Costa.
So we're starting with the right to vote. And, of course, the right to vote independently and in secret is a cornerstone of our democracy. But blind and partially sighted people continue to face unacceptable barriers to exercising their democratic right to vote. With that in mind, we're now joined by RNIB Parliamentary and Public Affairs Officer Emily Marr. Can you tell us how current arrangements can be a barrier to blind or partially sighted people voting independently?
So at the moment, there are a certain number of adaptions available at polling stations across the country. So the tactile voting device is essentially a piece of plastic which goes over the ballot paper, helping blind partially sighted voters know where to tick in the ballot box. However, there are a number of problems with it.
And in May this year, we heard about the High Court's decision against the government on this particular issue and this adaptation. Can you tell us what happened?
So Rachel Andrews, who has been registered blind since 2000, brought a legal case against the Cabinet Office with the help of the RNIB and the firm Lee Day Solicitors. And Ms. Andrews argued that the tactile voting device does not actually allow blind and partially sighted people to vote without assistance, because they still need someone to read out the names and still need someone to tell them which order they appear on the ballot paper, essentially meaning that they aren't voting independently nor in secret. Fantastically, Miss Andrews won her case. There was a very damning report handed down by the High Court about the government's current arrangements, which were declared unlawful and a parody of the electoral process, because they simply do not allow blind and partially sighted people to vote without any need or assistance. Rachel, after the decision was handed down, said, "The right to vote independently and in secret is fundamental to any democratic society, and is extremely frustrating that I've had to bring this legal challenge in order to force the government to make suitable arrangements for blind voters." So I think what's really interesting about this case is actually what are the Cabinet Office actually going to do? The difficult position that we're in at the moment is there doesn't seem to be an ideal alternative. So as part of these efforts, CEO Matt Stringer has written to the Cabinet Office asking them to meet with us as a matter of urgency so that we can work together to improve the situation for blind and partially sighted voters in this country. And so we would love to hear ideas anyone has about how to make voting for blind and partially sighted voters independent, accessible and more effective than we've seen with a tactile voting device.
Totally understand that one, Emily. As someone who uses the tactile voting device, it is not the best for casting your vote fully independently in the secrecy as well. So I'm really interested in how this one is going to progress. We'll give people contact details a little bit later, of course, for anything around campaigns. But Costa, I think up next we're looking at another topic on the ground this time.
That's right. On the ground is very much the right word. And some people might be finding that in some parts of the country, there are a growing number of dockless bikes for hire. And unfortunately, we're hearing that many of these bikes are abandoned or just left in ways which cause obstruction to pavements and other footways. Zoe Courtney is RNIB's Policy and Campaigns Officer for Inclusive Journeys, and she's here with us to talk about how these bikes can become obstacles to getting around safely and independently.
Hi, Costa. Thanks very much for having me again. So bike sharing schemes usually work by allowing people to hire a bike for a set amount of time and then return to a docking station. But this is not the case with a dockless bike. As the name suggests, dockless bikes do not need to be returned to a fixed docking station like a traditional bike share scheme. So when a user ends their journey with a dockless bike, the wheels automatically lock and the bike is then left anywhere rather than in a fixed docking station. And that includes places that obstruct pavements and walkways. We're getting a lot of complaints from blind and partially sighted people who've tripped over them, who've been inconvenienced or injured because of dockless bikes and where they're being left. So ideally, what we're hoping is for some rules and regulations to be put in place For example, there's the Highway Act, which could be enforced more so that local authorities remove pavement obstructions in a sort of much more timely manner, more stringent rules and regulations on the bike companies, and whether that's through a licensing scheme. We're just keen to make sure that there are safe areas if there are not specifically docks introduced like traditional dock bikes, that there are safe areas where dockless bikes can be left that do not obstruct the pavement and are not going to cause trip hazards.
So it sounds like there's a range of potential options, from controlling areas where they can be parked safely and out of the way, all the way to, presumably, could there be a ban on them completely?
That is something that we do see as an option. If it's not possible to make dockless bikes safe, and if it's not possible to ensure that they are not going to be left in the middle of pavements and potentially cause serious injuries to people, then a ban is the next thing that we'd be looking to campaign for, yeah. And of course, educating the riders themselves.
And where are things currently standing? You mentioned about RNIB and discussions.
So, yeah, there is some really positive news. Transport for London, as well as London councils, have mentioned that they are discussing and considering developing a bylaw. So a bylaw would cover London. It wouldn't affect or cover the rest of the country, but it is something that, if it was successful, could be reproduced in other areas. And it would be a way of enabling councils to give permission to bike hire companies, which at the moment isn't a requirement. So that is a really positive step. It's in very early stages at the moment. This sort of litmus test is going to be how involved disabled people's organisations are in these negotiations, in terms of like what will the guidelines involve, what kind of areas are going to be allowed to be parking areas, and the extent to which local communities are involved as well.
And in the meantime, what can people do if they find a dockless bike obstructing the footway in their area?
What we would encourage people to do is to gather as much information as they're able to. For example, what is the location that the bike is parked in? If they're able to find out what the company that the bike is with, a photograph, if that is possible, again, would be helpful. And with that information, to then report to their local authority, let the bike company know if they're able to determine which bike company it is. And if they are on Twitter, to tweet photos to bike companies, to their local authority, and to Department of Transport as well.
Again, some really important work being done. When we think about cluttered streets, you probably think about street furniture and billy bins and things like that. You never probably think about bikes, but there you go. And again, Costa, you know, we're talking about things that affect people on a daily basis, and a lot of these things affect people around the UK as well. But you really rely on blind and partially sighted people telling you these things, getting involved in the campaigns as well.
Of course, and taking action to campaign for accessible streets or for accessible voting and on other issues can take time and effort, but we can't bring about change without blind and partially sighted people getting involved to make it happen. We have some great resources to help people, and we can put you in touch with your local regional campaigns officer if you'd like to campaign to make your local area more accessible. For more information, you can call 0303 123 9999, email campaigns@rnib.org.uk, or visit our website at www.rnib.org.uk/campaigns.
And we'll have more RNIB campaigns for you next month. For now, though, to Costa, Emily and Zoe, thanks, guys, for joining us on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thanks very much, Alan.
Thanks, Alan.
Thanks, Alan.